Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5, The Demigods Appeal to the Lord. This is text 24. Sri Sukha Uvacha Ityabhasya Suram Vedhya Sahadeva Arindama Ajitasya Padam Saksaj Jagama Tamasa Param. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Iti, thus, Abhasya, talking, Suran, unto the demigods, Veda, Lord Brahma, who is the head of the universe, who's the head of this universe, and who gives everyone good sense in Vedic knowledge. Saha with Devai, the demigods, Arimdama, O Maharaj Parikshit, subduer of all kinds of enemies, such as the senses. Ajitasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Padam, to the place. Saksat, directly. Jagama, went. Tamasa, the world of darkness. Param, transcendental to, beyond. Sukadeva Goswami is addressing Maharaj Parikshit. O Maharaj Parikshit, subduer of all enemies, after Lord Brahma finished speaking to the demigods, he took them with him to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is beyond this material world. The Lord's abode is on an island called Svetadvipa, which is situated in the ocean of milk. Purport is quite long, so please listen up. Maharaj Parikshit is addressed here as Arindama, subduer of all enemies. Not only do we have enemies outside of our bodies, but within our bodies there are many enemies, such as lusty desires, anger, and greed. Maharaj Parikshit is specifically addressed as Arindama because in his political life he was able to subdue all kinds of enemies. And even though he was a young king, as soon as he heard that he was going to die within 7 days, he immediately left his kingdom. He did not follow the dictates of enemies within the body, such as lust, greed, and anger. He was not at all angry with the Muni's son who had cursed him. Rather, he accepted the curse and prepared for his death in the association of Sukadeva Goswami. Death is inevitable. No one can surpass the force of death. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit, while fully alive, wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He is consequently addressed here as Arindama. Another word, Surapriya, is also significant. Although Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is equal towards everyone, he is especially inclined toward his devotees. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. The devotees are all demigods. There are two kinds of men within this world. One is called the Deva, and the other is called the Asura. The Padma Purana states, Dao bhutasargo lokesmin daiva asura eva cha Vishnu bhakta smitam daivam asura tad viparyaya. Anyone who is a devotee of Lord Krishna is called a Deva, and others, even though they may be devotees of demigods, are called Asuras. Ravana, for example, was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but he is described as Asura. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu was described as a great devotee of Lord Brahma, yet he was also an Asura. Therefore, only the devotee of Lord Vishnu is called Sura, not Asura. asura. Lord Krishna is very much pleased with his devotees, even if they are not on the topmost stage of devotional service. Even on the lower stages of devotional service, one is transcendental, and if one continues with devotional life, he continues to be a deva or sura. If one continues in this way, Krishna will always be pleased with him and will give him all instructions so that he may very easily return home back to Godhead. Concerning Ajityas Padam, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the milk ocean of the material world, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Padam Shirodadi Stasvetadvipam Tamasam Prakrite Param. The island known as Svetadvipa, which is in the ocean of milk, is transcendental. It has nothing to do with this material world. A city government may have a rest house where the governor and important government officers stay. Such a rest house is not an ordinary house. Similarly, although Svetadvip, which is the ocean of milk, is in the material world, it is called Parampadam, transcendental. So Prabhupada covers a lot of different points in this particular verse. We very rarely understand that there are enemies within. We really define enemies as someone outside of us. That seems to be the application of the word, the definition of the word enemy. But here it's mentioned that there are internal enemies. And actually, when you actually make a comparison, you'll find they're more deadlier than the external enemies. Because the internal enemies are right next to you every second. They're actually, at any moment, they're ready to strike. That's why Prabhupada would say, the senses are servants or serpents. A serpent is a snake, and a snake carries poison in its teeth. And his tendency is to bite whenever possible. And if one gets bitten, poison comes in, and then just a matter of time before death appears. So the senses are sometimes compared to something that can work against you. In other words, you, being the soul, is trying to awaken your love for Krishna, engage in devotional service, but the mind, which directs the senses, has other ideas. It has other ideas. It wants to go this way or that way to experience sense objects in this material world, or to just to divert one's attention away for no apparent reason, away from devotional service. So one has to very carefully, with great determination, strictly control the mind and senses. Then it says there's three ways you can do that. It says one way is to fully engage in devotional service of the Lord. So that may not always be, we may not always be up to that standard. We can fully engage 24 hours a day. But that is the, what we say, complete shelter and the complete nullification of the senses acting in any other way. And then you have another one, is that to meditate on the instructions of the spiritual master. That we can perform regularly, where we are always thinking how to serve in this particular situation we find ourselves in. What is the instructions given to us in each and every circumstance we find ourselves in? And all of that is covered in the Shastras, by Srila Prabhupada, by his words, by his books. And we also learn by experience. And then the last one, they say another way to control the mind is senses is always think how to do good for others. And then that way one's mind is away from one's own apparent problems. We usually have problems when we think about it, and then we don't think about it, we don't have a problem. So that's why we say, you know, forget about it, it'll go away. The problems are just creations of the mind anyway. Yeah, this one, like Prahlad Maharaj, when his father, Rani Kashyapu, was trying to instruct him into various political ideas on how to rule, hoping that his son would become a great, you know, king following in his footsteps and would rule the universe like he has. And he was one of the principle was how to destroy your enemies. This is one of the teachings of political science, at least, how to, you know, identify and then eliminate your enemies. When Prahlad Maharaj was hearing that, he simply says, my dear father, the only enemy is your own mind. That's all. Friends and enemies are created simply by the mind, like that. And we see that too. Someday somebody is our friend, and somebody, that same person, does something different, and then all of a sudden it changes, the relationship changes. And so friends and enemies are just creations of the mind, like that. And we can make friends, or we can designate enemies simply by how the mind is working this way or that way. So these are the more dangerous enemies here. Maharaj Parikshit is being used here as an example of one who should, or may even could have got easily angered, being unjustly cursed by a Brahmin boy for something that was so small. He apparently was not given attention, and he simply took a dead snake and put it around the father of Sringi. What was his name? Remember? Huh? Shamika Rishi, yeah. He was in meditation. He didn't see the king. The king was traveling. He was thirsty. He wanted some water. He asked the Rishi. Rishi was in meditation and wasn't even aware of the king's presence. So he got disturbed, apparently. And he took a snake that was on the ground with a stick. He lifted it up with a stick and put it around. And he said, you're such a great sage, here is your garland. So that was unusual for Maharaj Parikshit to act like that. But apparently this happened by the arrangement of the Lord for a greater reason. But Sringi, his 12-year-old son, immediately got angry when he heard about it. And he unjustly cursed the king to die within 7 days, be bitten by some kind of poisonous snake, which is a flying snake. When Shamik Rish heard that, he was shocked. He said, you have the king, the king of the world, you have cursed him to die? He was really upset with his son, but the curse was given. Maharaj could have nullified it. But he didn't. He accepted it as the arrangement of the Lord and took the opportunity to retire from political life, family life, and sat down to hear Bhagavatam for 7 days spoken by Sukadev Goswami and became fully self-realized. So it was an advantage. And he could have got angry. He could have counter-cursed the boy also. He had that power. But he didn't do any of these things. So he says his internal enemies were not active like that. So we see here how great souls, when they are, may even have reasons to become get envious or angry or greedy or whatever, they check it with their own power of their spiritual practice. They remember Krishna and they become very forgiving. And one of the most important of all qualities of a Vaishnava is forgiveness. It's considered to be a very lofty principle of social existence, learning how to forgive others' transgressions against you in one form or another. Prabhupada would use the example of Lord Jesus Christ when he was being crucified. He was praying to the Lord to forgive his persecutors, and not even considering any negativity toward them. So there's an example of a great soul, how a great soul doesn't take personal offense. They see everything as a higher arrangement. But, you know, we may not always be like that, just like we have. I was just reading in Srila Prabhupada's account, it's Giriraj Maharaj's book, I'll Build You a Temple, the Juhu story. There is one, Prabhupada quotes Ravindranath Tagore, that to do harm to other is wrong, and to allow others to do harm to you is also wrong. Prabhupada quotes that, and he uses that as the, when Mr. Nair tried to cheat the devotees and also cause great physical and, harm to the devotees, broke the temples, arranged for all these things. Prabhupada fought back. Fought back in a very determined way. And Prabhupada quotes this particular, this was after Mr. Nair had his heart attack and was no longer there. Prabhupada quotes this. He said, this is the Kshatriya mood. He doesn't say it's a principle that we follow through the whole principle of devotional service. He said, the Kshatriya mood. Yudye apa chapalayanam. The spirit of fighting, that if somebody wants to harm you, you should not allow that to happen. And Prabhupada uses that as an example of how we fought back when they were trying to cause us so many problems like that. So those of you who are Kshatriyas, you can appreciate that, which is usually the European mood. It's kind of a Kshatriya culture, the Europeans. But in a general sense, we find here Sukadeva Goswami or Maharaj Pariksit, he's not like that. He's actually acting in a different way. He's more acting on the Brahminical platform, although it's interesting because he is in the role of a Kshatriya. He's a ruling king. So we see, there will always be people who will cause us difficulty in life. This is just the way life is. There's three miseries. Adiatmika, Adibhautika, and Adidaipika. Jai Panchatattva ki jai. And Adibhautika means miseries by other living entities. So that comes by living in the world. You're sitting peacefully, you're trying to read, and there's some mosquito won't let you alone, or some fly, or something, or just some, there's always some little living entity, either visible, invisible, small, big. And Prabhupada said even the government gives you trouble all the time. They're also doing that right now, playing with people's lives. You can't do this, you can't do that, and if you don't do this, you won't be able to do that. And if you do this, we like you, and if you don't do this, we're going to get you. So it's just, it's just the way the world is. It's just full of difficulties. Adi Bhautika is an increasing also. The devotees all have to learn how to deal with that. But the idea is to learn how to become tolerant. And learn how to become tolerant of all these. Because tolerance is one of the highest principles of execution of devotional service. That's why Lord Chaitanya made that a statement of emphasis when he spoke that verse, Trinadapi Sanichena, Tayori Vasa Hishnuna Manina Mamanadena Kirtaniya Sadadahi. A person who is not tolerant will become disturbed even from the smallest things. Today you fasted for breakfast, so you haven't eaten breakfast, so it's time for lunch. And you go there and you're just looking forward to the dal, and somebody burnt the dal today. Oh, God, my God. Get that guy out of the kitchen. what can you do? It's like your hopes for either normality or some enjoyment is being sometimes, interfered with by the way of the world. This is the way it is. Prabhupada talks about one man. He said, I wanted to live happily, so I decided to build a house so I could be happy, but the house burnt down. using that as an example of how everybody has big plans, but then everything changes. So learning how to tolerate all the disturbances, reverses in life, and they'll always be like that. And then the ultimate reverse is, I want to live forever in this body, in this material world. Death is for somebody else, right? It's not for me. I heard about it. I also know people who have experienced it, but I'm different. This is, what was it, Yudhisthira Maharaj actually said that. This is the most incredible thing in the world. That everyone's seeing their friends, family members, and others are dying, and they're thinking, it's for them. It's not for me. But this is somewhat, what we say, detrimental to one's spiritual life, to kind of push that aside, because by remembering that death can appear at any time, we become more serious in our execution of devotional service. That's important, because the calamities and sufferings of the material world are reminders how important it is to become Krishna conscious. So in one sense, they're also beneficial. When they come by way of Krishna, the top, what is that verse? Tatenu shankampa sushamikshamanam bhujane vakripam vipakam vidha vahubir vidadanam asteji veti yo mukti padesha dayabak. That Krishna sometimes gives us some difficulty, some suffering, some whatever, for whatever reason. And it's just to purify one a little bit, make one humble, one detached from some form of sense gratification. But a devotee doesn't see, oh, why is Krishna doing that to me? He's the all-powerful supreme controller. He can control everything. Why is he allowing it to happen? Maybe he's not doing it, but he's allowing me to suffer anyway. So sometimes in the back of our mind, or maybe even a little more forefront, we kind of think, what happened? Krishna's not on duty. He took a break. You know, Chaturmasya, yeah, he's observing the milk fast, and he can't play with the cows during that time. So it's just part of life that we have to somehow or other accept when Krishna makes some arrangements. And then this verse is very, very important. Because Prabhupada put this verse as one of the most important verses for devotees to learn and to understand. Tate nukampa shushamiksha manu, Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse number 8. 10:14:8. Yeah. Spoken by Lord Brahma himself. After Krishna had foiled his attempts to steal the cowherd boys and calves, and then he woke up to his senses and starts glorifying the Lord like that. That 14th chapter is one of the most powerful chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes we say that during the month of Purushottam Mas, which comes once in every 27 months, which is the most holiest of all months, even more so than Kartik, that we should read that chapter each day, at least once a day, read the entire chapter. That's a recommendation, austerity for that month. Because Bhagavatam comes as one of the services that one should emphasize during that month, more and more Bhagavatam, particularly that particular chapter. So that verse is very important for us to understand and to apply, because it helps us to become, stay fixed in devotional service. There's two things that can knock you out of devotional service: things that go wrong and unexpectedly, and things that go too right. What I mean by that is that sometimes certain niceties that come in Krishna consciousness can be a deviation in our own devotional life. Like sometimes if you, maybe you inherit some money from a deceased relative, and now all of a sudden you have a lot of wealth. Now that could also cause you to become less enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. We spend more time worrying about that. or just getting involved with different kinds of businesses and trying to make so much money like that. And then we think, oh, I'll give the money to Krishna. But then when you get involved with businesses, what do? You spend all your time putting money into the business, trying to increase the business, trying to, you know, compete with those who have the same business. So there's a lot of so-called niceties, apparently, that can also divert our attention away from the goal of life. So we have to see both of these, not just the apparent things that we don't like. Here, there's another category of enemies, and that is the demons. The demons are a class of people that are a created race. Sometimes we think someone becomes a demon, but actually there are actually planets where our demoniac living entities live. Sometimes they're called rakshasas, shakshasas, and yakshas, not so bad. Jinns, what else? Pishachas and kusmandas. There's a whole list of lower beings. Bhutanas also. There's a long, long list. And they're also highly developed beings. They are very intelligent materially. And when a certain area of the world becomes more and more sinful, you find more and more demons and start taking birth in that area. That's why Prabhupada said in 1972 in one lecture, he said, the demons are only increasing. He said they will increase and increase and increase. This one he said, but devotees, you have to be like Prahlad Maharaj. You have to take shelter of Krishna and chant the holy names of the Lord. He uses the example of Prahlad Maharaj and Devaki, both, who are being harassed by powerful demons such as Kamsa and Hiranyakashipu. But what did they do? They took full shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then Krishna's protection is complete. But if one doesn't take shelter, although one may be a devotee, one may find themselves being disturbed and harassed by such living entities. And these living entities, this principle is an eternal principle. This verse from the Padma Purana, it says that as there are devas, there are also asuras. They are eternal. As long as the material world exists, there will always be demons and they'll always give trouble to others. Like that. It's like I know one devotee right now, he's going through a lot of suffering. He's being attacked by, I know a couple that are being attacked by demons at night in their sleep for whatever reasons, personal reasons there and other reasons. But, you know, he can actually see these horrible faces appearing in his dreams. And so, you know, these people exist. They exist on this planet. And as the balance of karma shifts to more sinful activities, you'll find more and more of these beings are inhabiting this level. So devotees don't have anything to fear, but we should always be very careful to make sure we take full shelter of Krishna, always, like that. Like that. So this is, you know, he's probably, you can expect harassment, he said. They will give you trouble, but always take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna will give you the protection. And then Prabhupada deals with one other point that even great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they give shelter to such beings, such as Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kamsa, what was his name? That one that fought with Banasura, yeah. He fought with Krishna, but he was a disciple of Lord Shiva. So you see, these great powerful demigods who are in charge of the modes of passion and ignorance, they give shelter to these demons because these demons perform the austerities and take shelter of the devas. The devas can give material powers, more material powers, and therefore they want benedictions and powers from these devas. And just like even Haravana was a devotee of Lord Shiva. He actually pleased Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gave him a benediction. And then he considered Lord Shiva his worshipable Lord. And he became very powerful. One who worships Lord Shiva in a proper way will become very materially opulent. Very material. That's mentioned in the Bhagavatam also, where it says that the devotees of Vishnu, they're not so rich. And the devotees of Shiva, they got money. Vishnu is opulent and his devotees have nothing. And Shiva has nothing and his devotees are opulent. Yeah, it's like that. I remember, one story Prabhupada tells about Lord Shiva. Parvati says to Lord Shiva, "My dear Prabhu," she calls him Prabhu, "you are a very powerful, personality, and you have so much influence. And I am the personification of the material energy. And we don't even have a house. We're living under a tree. What to do? So why don't you get us a house?" Mataji's need houses. So, if you're going to get married, plan on that ahead of time. Because they want houses, They can't live in huts or in ashrams. So, Shiva says, "All right." So he arranges for a house to be built. So now they have a house, and then they're going to have a housewarming ceremony to welcome, that open the house. It's part of Vedic culture to inaugurate living into the house. So they invite many sages and other personalities to come to the ceremony. Now that is a very big ceremony, and it's over. Now it's the duty of the host to remunerate the guests. These were sages and saints, Brahmins. You have to give some charity to the Brahmanas. So when it came time for that, Shiva, he doesn't have anything. So he gave his house. He was back underneath the bale tree. So yeah, he's not so interested. I remember when I was in America, I met one very powerful. It was a woman, and she was very powerful spiritualist. And she would dress really fancy, but she was a worshiper of Lord Shiva. And she would teach devotees, people to worship Shiva and pray to Shiva and chant mantras to Shiva. She was very opulent, she was young, quite. By material standards, quite good-looking, had a lot of wealth. And her followers were also becoming better, more material or opulent. So I knew that she actually was not really a devotee of Lord Shiva. She was a devotee of Lord Krishna, but she kept it hidden, because you can't make any money by being a devotee of Lord Krishna. But yet she saw me, I came dressed like this, and she kind of like acknowledged, Hare Krishna. But I knew she was, I knew, because there was other things in her life that indicated that she was a devotee of Lord Krishna. And it wasn't very profitable. And she was very popular. I can't remember her name, but she was, I think she's still around. She was quite young at the time. That was about 40 years ago, back in the 1980s. Yeah, so the devotees of Brahma, Shiva, many of them are, lower class beings like that. So, but here, this particular verse is just emphasizing the importance of taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not becoming attracted to anything material. And even though, because the devotees, they can get anything they want. If you perform devotional service, you can be rich. If you're not rich, you're not performing devotional service. At least in the sense that Krishna will always provide for his devotees. Of course, if a devotee is humble and doesn't want anything, Krishna will give him anything, everything. And then that devotee will use it for spreading Krishna consciousness. But if a devotee wants it, and Krishna sees, well, this is not going to be good for their spiritual life, he may not give it. Or he may give just what they need and live to keep body and soul together. But Prabhupada said, Krishna can give us the whole world, but he says, you're not ready. You can't, you don't know what to, you wouldn't know what to do with it. That's what he Prabhupada saying. We have to become ready to use whatever Krishna gives us in Krishna consciousness so we can spread Krishna consciousness. And living is not very hard for a devotee. A devotee can be happy with just the basic things in life. Okay, so there's much more to this purport. Last statement, that there is a planet in the material world called Svaita Dvipa, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, stays, and that's where Brahma is going to speak to the Lord in order to get some help in this particular situation with the demigods are now in trouble. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes, Mataji.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your wonderful class. If I remember well, then I hear you saying when you were reading the purport, although Brahma was a great devotee, he still was an asura, and I didn't get that one, because that means that he was a demon. Is it because he stole the calves?
No, Lord Brahma is not. He's a great demigod, but there are personalities who come to him who are demons for material benedictions, such as Hiranyakashipu. So he gives favors to the demons if they perform the proper austerities.
Oh yeah, I thought
he is not a demon.
No, that's what I heard.
No, it doesn't say that in
the book. Then I read it in the wrong way. I was wondering why it's written like, although Brahma was a great devotee, he was an asura. I read it in the wrong way. So then I've been mistaken.
Mm-hmm, I can't find it.
You saw this also. Although Brahma is a great devotee, and then he was an asura.
No,
that's the answer is no. But it was written like that.
Okay, but don't pay attention to it. I thought I saw it written like that.
Definitely not an asura.
No, he is not like that. But it was written like that. Yeah. That was my point.
Yeah, but don't speak that so much, because maybe people get mad at you. Therefore, only the devotees of Lord Vishnu call Sura. Lord Krishna is very much pleased with the devotees. Rani Kashyapu is described as the great devotee of Lord Brahma, yet he was also in a Sura.
You see, that's
not,
what...
Not Brahma, but Rani Kashyapu. Sentence. It's just the English, the way the English is being explained.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Mataji. Behind.
I will read the questions from Alvatuta Radha Dasa. First, one question bothers me. In the Priti Samvursa, it said, according to the method of attaining the Lord, after attaining Brahman, one attains Bhagavan as seen in the case of Ajmila. Question is, this general path go to the Brahmajyoti, then to Krishna Loka? How long we will stay in the Jyoti? And as per Raghavatmacha Chandrika, we first go to Brahma Vrindavana, the universe, where Krishna has his Lila manifest.
You speak so nicely, but I couldn't understand anything.
Okay.
So maybe
yeah. Someone else.
Maybe somebody else can.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better if you don't sing it. It's better if you speak it. How about, yeah.
In this general path, go to the Brahma Jyoti, then to Krishna Loka.
How about, would you like to read the verse? Let him read it. All you ladies, speak so sweetly that I'm only falling asleep. You need somebody.
No, no, no.
He's been well versed in English.
One question bothers me. In the Priti Sandarbha it is said, according to the method of attaining the Lord, after attaining Brahman, one attains Bhagavan, as seen in the case of Ajamila.
Right.
So the question is this a general path? Go to the Brahma Jyoti, then to Krishna Loka. How long will we stay in the Jyoti? And, okay, first maybe this.
No, it's not a general. The answer is no, it's not a general path. That's a path that is there, but it's not the general path. The general path is Mahajano Yena Katasapanta, to follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas, to simply engage in devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, and one makes progress through different levels of bhakti. Then there's 9 stages, and when you come to the 9th stage, which is prema bhakti, pure love of God, and that's perfection. That's Bhagavan realization. So that's not, that's just, that's an example for others who have attained it in that way. But that is not our method for practice.
And then the second question is, Shukadeva Goswami was testing the proficiency of Parikshit when giving the process of atonement according to karma. But didn't Shukadeva Goswami already know the ability of Parikshit?
Can you do that again? A little slower?
Okay. Shukadeva Goswami was testing the proficiency of Parikshit.
Parikshit.
Okay. Yeah. When giving the process of atonement according to karma. But didn't Shukadeva already know the ability of Parikshit?
Didn't he know what?
The ability.
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 Did he know that the ability of Maharaj Priya? So he was testing him?
Yeah, that's the... He was testing the proficiency of Parikshit. I don't know what this
How
means.
How is he testing the perfection?
I don't know, it's not written here.
No, he was just testing him how he was going to react to the situation. Yeah, well, the guru has to test you just to see where you're at. Yeah, that's fine. And that's in line with our tradition. The guru has to test the disciples, and that's just to make them more Krishna conscious. If you don't like getting tested, then too bad. No, I mean, I know one young lady, she's married now, she said when I first joined and I wanted to practice Krishna consciousness, my spiritual master said, you live in the Brahmacharini ashram for 1 year. She said, that was my test, I had to do it. And she said, I did it, and I'm happy I did it. So the guru has to test the disciples like that. Not just let the disciple do whatever they want in the name of Krishna consciousness. Sri Devi, you got a question? Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj, for giving this class. I was also, like Mataji, puzzled a little bit about this description of people who are devotees of demigods, and Srila Prabhupada says they are called asuras. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people, especially in India, are worshippers of demigods, and they are pious as far as I can...
Prabhupada's emphasizing one class, that's all.
Oh, okay.
If you read other parts, there are people who worship the demigods like that. But if you go, the idea is, instead of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is our constitutional nature, we're worshiping something, we're worshiping the material energy. That's what we're doing.